Stepping into the studio, Dan Abrams is with us, and you love Dan Abrams for many, many, many years. Started at Court TV, worked his way to the ABC News. I saw you in a heated battle with Governor Chris Christie over the weekend, as you were talking.
Governor Christie and I have been doing the rounds together now that he's an ABC News contributor.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of fun to see the two of you this.
Yeah, it's and the truth is that. Actually, most of the time we're agreeing on the Trump-related questions.
On the law, it appears.
Right, that's right. That's right. And that's part of the thing that's been so frustrating about covering the Trump legal issues has been that there's legal analysis. And anytime you do legal analysis, in the past, it was just, Dan Abrams thinks this and this and this. Mm-hmm. Now it's, Dan Abrams is biased. Dan Abrams, no matter what, I mean, if I say that I don't think a sitting president can't be indicted, and then I get, nailed from the left, there are arguments to be made. Why would you be saying a sitting president? And then, I get bashed by the right for talking about a lot of the absurd arguments that Trump's lawyers are making.
I would make the argument. Now, you've got a book out that takes place right before the Civil War. This is fascinating because this is like a brand extension of you in terms of a legal analyst. It's Lincoln's last trial. It's this murder case that he did right before he became president of the United States, ran for president of the United States down in Springfield. And it's fascinating because it's got all this great texture and nuggets of history and of little things about him that I think are so fascinating and about the times. But we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But I am convinced that this is the most consequential moment in American history, save two or three others since the Civil War. I think this, around the time of World War II, when we're deciding to be in or be out, I think the 1950s during the McCarthy era. And now, in terms of this, will set a path for the trajectory of America. Would you agree with that?
I think that what we're seeing is a radical departure in many ways from the role of the president. There are a percentage of Americans, not a majority, who would say that that's a good thing. And in that sense, this is a transformative moment. But I think that, I don't think that it is as monumental as some people say and some people fear. I mean, for example, if you were going to say to me, what is the single most important thing that you think that going into this, I would have said, North Korea is something that really scares me a lot. The question would be, how is this president going to deal with North Korea? Whatever one thinks of how things are going with North Korea, it doesn't seem, at least for now, like it's going to be cataclysmic. Whether there's going to be a deal or no deal, or whether Trump is going to give away too much or not give away too much, et cetera. But I guess I'm not as, I don't think that this is going to be, I think this is a completely different time. I think that we are seeing things we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I think the system works.
Well, let's talk about cataclysm for a minute. Isn't cataclysm, because one of your other ventures, which is, I think, your greatest contribution to humanity is Mediaite, because it takes the media out, and you were able to analyze not just the stories, but the way the media tracks them, and then the way that the politics reflect off of the media, or try to use the media to advance their agenda. And I think to this exact point, is that cataclysm is really being driven by who's in power or who wants to tell the scariest story. Where are we on ISIS or terrorism in America? We've forgotten totally about that. The biggest threat we have now is our southern border, and it was North Korea. North Korea was a huge threat 3 months ago. Now they're our best friends. We're meeting with them. It's all going to be fine. And the heat gets turned up either by the White House or maybe congressional forces or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I mean, look, but I think that, we are at a time. Look, as someone who's both a member of the media and a lawyer, I find the attacks on the Department of Justice concerning. I don't think that it's going to impact sort of the future of the nation. I think it's really troubling, and I think that the independence of the Department of Justice is really important. I think that the attacks on the media, you know, look, I've been a media critic a lot of the time.
Right.
But to simply say, oh, news I don't like is fake news, is also problematic. The media deserves some criticism. The media has long been, in my view, left of center. But the notion that the media, the mainstream media, doesn't in the overwhelming number of cases get it right, it is very rare. And people, oh, how could you say that? You know how I can say that? Is because every time the mainstream media gets it wrong, we know that. And there's either a correction or there's not, and then there's a fight about it.
Right.
But what about firing. Every other story? All of these other stories that are coming out and being becoming, we're realizing are true. Oh, well, you know, yeah, we're not going to talk.
Right. Well, I think today...
And by the way, and look, let's come back to the book for a minute.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in Lincoln's time, you know, there was also a very divided media back then. And as Lincoln was preparing to run for president, there were particular publications he knew would be his supporters and the ones who would be his critics.
Right.
There was the Republican papers, there were the Democratic papers, etc. And, you know, and that was just part of how the system worked.
Well, the post-war hegemony of three networks splitting up the news duties. And basically, yeah, if you looked at newscasts in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s, and you watched that half-hour nightly news, it'd be the same stories presented almost exactly the same way. Now, you're going back to a period of time, like it was in the 1860s through the 1940s, where you had a bunch of different newspapers and you had a bunch of different media voices.
Or even in the 1700s. I mean, when you had these papers, I mean, people were writing, you know, anonymous sometimes named pamphlets,
right,
where they were taking positions. And Lincoln was very savvy about which papers, you know, he actually got in trouble because he wrote anonymously for a paper and criticized someone early in his career. And that became a big issue. And it almost led to a duel. And, you know, it was
could have been a musical.
Yeah, no, it
turned
was,
out not to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, you know, it was a real issue for him.
Well, let's go back. It's an interesting way of moving back and forth here between these. We'll get back to Trump in a moment, but let's go back to Lincoln's Last Trial, your new book, Dan Abrams. Take me to what happened there. Why? What the center action of this book is about this murder trial down in Springfield, right? That Abraham Lincoln, as the country lawyer,
yeah,
as he was known at that point, was in the middle of trying. And how did that lead to him becoming this kind of national figure that could run for president?
So this was 9 months before he gets the Republican nomination. He's thinking about the presidency. Doesn't mean that the rest of the country's thinking about him that much.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a huge national figure at the time. But there's this controversial murder case. Friend stabs another friend, says it was self-defense. Community wants justice. What makes this book so interesting is it's the only transcript that exists of any case Lincoln ever tried.
Hmm.
There's a full verbatim transcript. Abraham Lincoln, in his own words, transcribed by the same guy who transcribed the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Wow. Fast writer.
Yeah, and it was a new thing to do back then, was to figure out how to do shorthand, etc. So having that transcript... It was only discovered in 1989, the transcript, in the garage of where the great-grandson of the defendant had lived, wrapped in a bow, in a box. And I was amazed that it kind of became a footnote to history, that, wow, this whole box of transcribed words of Abraham Lincoln. And so my co-author David Fisher and I did a ton of research around this case to figure out, why would Lincoln have taken it? He had everything to lose,
right,
by taking it. He took it for a variety of reasons, including who asked him to do it. He knew the family, etc. But it was a super close case.
He ends up against one of his chief rivals, right? One of his chief rivals. There's an interesting sort of mending of fences there, right?
Correct. Meaning Peter Cartwright, was one of the best known preachers in America at the time, much more famous than Lincoln was in 1859. And he became the star witness for the defense. But he was also the defendant's grandfather. But he had counseled the victim right before he died. And the victim said to him, I forgive the defendant. I brought this upon myself. Mm-hmm. And the question would be, does that get into evidence? And there was Lincoln, apparently, according to people who were there and his partner, have never seen Lincoln as angry, furious at the ruling against him on that initially, which the judge eventually changed. But when people say to me, what's the most surprising thing about this book in terms of researching it, I say it was reading the accounts of how angry Lincoln got. I mean, people were talking about him literally seeming like he was ready to jump over the bench. And we don't think of Lincoln that way, right? We think of Lincoln as this mild-mannered, kind of intellectual.
Daniel Day-Lewis won't shut up, that guy.
You know, never. And he was just infuriated at this, and I think in part because he really believed in the defendant's innocence.
All right, so now as we head looking at the Lincoln presidency, at that moment of great crisis and civil unrest and the dividing of a nation and his leadership through that and the decisions he had to make. And we tend to try to, you know, in sixth grade history, we try to make it as simple as possible in process. But it wasn't. It was messy. It was ugly. There was a lot of demagoguery back then. There still is demagoguery about the South now. Why do you think, looking at this, we are still arguing some of the same tenets in 2018 that they were arguing in the 1860s? States' rights, civil issues.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that, well, the Constitution was, you know, created in a way that left open sort of questions. And so I think that our founding fathers would have said it's a good thing that we continue to debate what is the extent of states' rights, for example. But I think that you're right that back then there was demagoguery, there were radicals on both sides. And if you say, why do you think Lincoln was so successful as a president? In my view, and boy, this would be a lesson for today, the reason is that he was a moderate.
As a lawyer, he saw both sides of the argument.
Well, not just as a lawyer, but as a political leader. Meaning, remember, there were many abolitionists saying, he's not going far enough. It's not that Lincoln didn't want to go further. It's that he felt politically it was smarter to go slower. Now, some people looking back on that could say, are you actually saying that? And the answer is, look, the way Lincoln sort of did it achieved more because he was a moderate, because he showed at least an understanding of the side that he disagreed with. He showed deference to them. Again, some people would say he shouldn't have in retrospect, et cetera. But I think part of his success as president was because he was a moderate.
And is moderation dead in America?
I mean, it feels... It's not that it's dead in America. It's just that it's not what gets people riled up. I mean, someone asked me, a well-known TV personality said to me, looking at Mediaite, and said to me, I want to start the Drudge of the Middle. And I said to him, there is no such thing.
That's right.
I said, it's never going to work. The whole point is either you put in really spicy headlines on the left that get the left riled up, or you put in what Drudge does on the right, spicy headlines on the right that get people excited. I said, the middle is nuanced, and the problem is that everyone on the right is going to say you're liberal, and everyone on the left is going to say you're conservative, and they're not going to view you as the middle.
Right.
So
how does the middle hold? Because if the middle doesn't hold, we end up like a Balkanized European state or any of the other tin horn dictatorships in the world.
That's the danger, I think, right now, is that, you know, people are becoming so tribal in this era that it's frightening. I think that's a real, and look, that's just both in politics and in media. I can tell you that. Again, on Mediaite, Rachel Maddow has regularly described Mediaite as the conservative media website. Sean Hannity regularly describes it as the left-wing loons over at Mediaite. And, you know, it's just, It's what you deal with, right?
I know. It's kind of a moment of pride, I would imagine. Yeah. But it is also the reality that your message is being staticked up.
Yeah.
You're
either with us or against us.
Right. Well, by the people whose message, they have a very, both of those people that you just identified have a very specific lane that they want to live in.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we're on a superhighway of traffic. Sometimes America has to move in lanes a little bit. Has to move to the left, has to move to the right.
But that's my point about Lincoln, right? And I think that, you know, one of the things that I admire most about him is he was on the right side in terms of what he believed. And then the question was, how do I execute on that? And I think that people, you know, forget that sometimes in terms of how to get things done in this country now.
Dan Abrams is the author. Lincoln's Last Trial is the book. I want to bring you back to the news of the week. Let's talk a little bit about the state of the investigation here. Obviously, now you have the president saying he can pardon himself. Do you believe, as a lawyer, as a legal analyst, that the president can pardon himself legally, if not politically?
Look, here's the thing. So I think that it's almost a circular question, right? In the sense that I think that the pardon, the power of pardon, is viewed as an absolute power, but it's also an absolute power that's checked. I mean, the reason the checking system is the Congress. It's not really typically going to be the courts. There's already been an effort to challenge President Trump's pardon of Sheriff Arpaio, because basically saying, because that was an effort to pardon someone for violating a court order. And when the argument goes, the president shouldn't be able to nullify one of the branches of government.
Right.
Basically saying, you can ignore any court order because I'm going to pardon. And as a result, if the only crime was contempt of court, that shouldn't be considered a valid pardon. You know, look, it's probably not a winning argument. But the first thing I would say is, I think that it is very unlikely that Mueller's team will seek to indict the president, because I think it's pretty clear that you can't indict a sitting president. There are arguments on the other side of that, but I think that most people believe that you can't indict a sitting president. And therefore, there would be no pardoning of himself.
Right.
But let's assume that would happen, and he would try to pardon himself. I think that the check would have to be Congress and not the courts.
All right, so Papadopoulos' wife is saying that she would like the president to pardon him.
I'm sure she would.
Yeah, and is that politically tenable in this environment, in a year in which Republicans are staying very quiet because they got to win not just their primaries, but also because the primary season is about to come to an end, but the generals here, and they don't want Republicans staying home or sitting on their hands?
Well, look, you know, I think that Trump is not going to pardon someone like Papadopoulos right now. I don't think he's going to pardon anyone involved in the investigation until the report is out. You know, Manafort may end up benefiting greatly down the road, as opposed to Gates, his former partner, from fighting the fight.
But Manafort, now, this witness tampering, that's a pretty big deal, right? A witness tampering charge?
It's not a charge. It's an allegation that why his bail should be revoked. So he's not actually being charged with a new crime of witness tampering. Right. But at this point, it's simply just an allegation as to why he's violated the terms of his bail.
Okay.
Which included...
One would assume, though, if this bail is revoked, they'll turn that into a charge, right? Wouldn't you want to...
Not necessarily. I mean, not necessarily, because they could... Look, it's a different standard to say he was told not to reach out to anybody, and he reached out to them, and he was tampering with witnesses with the clear goal and intent of, you know, thwarting justice. And that's a different standard. It's easier to prove he reached out to someone than it is to say, and he was told not to, than it is to say he reached out to someone in an effort to tamper with the witness.
Okay. As now an official historian, having written this book about Lincoln, and as a member of the media, a lawyer, legal analyst, at the end of this, let's just say by 2020, let's assume that the president, you know, finishes out his full term and we can worry about the world after that. Do you think America can redirect itself in a way that does tack back toward the middle here without lurching perhaps all the way to the left or staying lurching even further to the right than it is into a more popular
thing? I think that when you see Democrats ahead, not as much anymore, in the 2018 House elections, you see a move to the middle, right? You see the country saying, you know, I'm in effect, let's make sure there's some checks in place here. So, again, I guess I'm a bit more sanguine about the future of the country than some are. That doesn't mean I'm not incredibly troubled by some of what I'm seeing. But on a sort of existential level, I think we're going to be okay. And look, I think that Lincoln faced a far more serious existential issue, obviously, at the time that he was president, and I think that the challenges that he faced were obviously, you know, many multiples.
Right. Well, the aftermath of him, I mean, the aftermath of bringing together, it was a pretty rocky 20 years that followed the Civil War.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't, you know, you had an impeachment of a president, you had rebellion in the South.
And you also had, you know, you had an effort, you really could have had a big move on civil rights right afterwards that was completely thwarted.
Took 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It 100
could have been, done in the 1860s and 1870s. And instead, it reverted back because there was no enforcement of any of the progress.
Dan Abrams, Lincoln's Last Trial, The Murder Case That Propelled Him to the Presidency, is the book, is out now. You and your co-author, David Fisher, he needs to get some credit here because undoubtedly did a lot of research.
I gave him a lot of credit. It is sort of ridiculous that his name is smaller than mine on the title, but he was terrific and you know, a critical part of this book.
People should get this because it's a great I think the timing of this is excellent because you get to look, it takes you back in time. I find myself watching a lot of movies right now that took place where we ended up winning the war, whether it was the Cold War, World War II, something else like that, where it was a really tough time. It was a moment where Americans were not sure how this was all going to go down. And we found our way through it, and it gives me a lot of hope. And I think this book does sort of the same thing because it sets you up into kind of the granularity of the way we really live our lives.
And look, we're talking big picture esoteric here. The bottom line is this book is also just a legal thriller. I mean, it's just a really compelling...
Because we don't really know how it's going to turn out because nobody knows this case.
It's a great murder case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's excellent. Excellent. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
It.